Activate interlocks, dinotherms connected, intracells up, mega thrusters are go. Let's go, not appropriate.
I can only pray that you're recording that.
Are you satisfied now? Are you ready?
Please say you recorded that.
It's possible.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 117, and it's a not regular episode, I guess, again, because Hillary can't make it.
Yeah, Hillary is neck deep in meetings, M-E-E-T-I-N-G-S.
Weird. Neck deep in meetings.
She's in meetings right now. No, we didn't really know we were going to record today. We're recording at a weird time. It's Monday. Is it Monday?
Monday, 7:25 Eastern.
Yeah, so it's Monday. 4:25 Monday Pacific. Evening. So we're recording Monday, and Hillary is in meetings about PAX. And what else is going on right now?
I guess that's important. She can be excused.
Yeah, so she can't come, which is sad. So. Yeah. So
Sorry, that's my fault. I take full responsibility for that.
That was not me for once. So yeah.
It was, yeah.
Go Scott. I'm so proud of you, Scott. It's always weirder coming out of Scott's mouth.
Let's do the rundown.
I don't really know what we're going to do today, but this weekend we went to AFO, which is the Anime Fest Orlando.
Yeah, this was, sure. I think, 14, yeah. Number 14.
The irony is that we're not huge anime people, but we just kind of went. So that was fun, we'll talk about it. And then we're just going to talk about other stuff. There's a bunch of games planned for Xbox One. There's some games that came out this week. Ash played Going Home. Ash saw Kick-Ass 2. Let's see, I played... a game called Take on Mars, which is in a early access Steam phase kind of thing right now. And we don't have an Aquato, so we're just going to wing it. Does that sound good?
Yeah. Might be a short episode. Might be long. We'll see.
That's okay. But at least we can entertain people on their drives or walks or whatever they do.
Yeah.
So, Ash, why don't you start us off?
Well, I went to AFO with you guys this weekend, which was a moderately sized convention here in Orlando, and we'll talk about that during our news section. I guess we'll dig into the details of that, but that was fun. It's always fun to hang out with the bros, and my wife came along. Surprisingly, she was like, I'll go to a anime convention, and I told her she had to wear the narwhal hat that I bought her from PAX. I usually, when I go to PAX or like any conventions and my wife doesn't go, I buy like the most hideous gift I can find and like pretend that it's like something that she should be happy about. So I got her this hat that looks like a narwhal with like a giant horn, but the horn's a rainbow and it's like blue and like just like horrible. And I made her put it on. I'm like, hey, put on this hat I bought for you. It's so awesome. And she put it on and was like looking at me like, I fucking hate you.
Weirdly, though, if she had worn that, she would have stuck out less at the convention.
That is true. Yeah, yeah.
But not wearing it.
That's true. So that was fun. I played an indie game this weekend called Gone Home, which I liked a whole lot. And
it's all over the place, man.
Yeah, you know, I heard about it from the Birches, who I really respect their opinions on games, because I don't think I've ever listened to them say that they like something and then I've never liked it. So I was listening to the Birches talk about it, and I was like, you know, fuck it. Like, I don't know what the game's about. I know nothing about it, so I'm just going to go ahead and get it on Steam, and I'm going to sit down and play it. And that's what I did, so we'll talk about that in the review section. I think everyone should definitely check out Gone Home, though. And I played a bit more Dragon's Crown and got to a point that I found to be a little bit frustrating. So we'll talk about that as well. Oh, and I went and saw Kick-Ass 2, which we'll talk about.
Okay.
I guess we'll talk about everything I did later.
We should all talk about what you did.
I did.
Not now. I don't want to talk about it.
I had a crazy action-packed weekend, which was great. Let's jump to Scott.
You always jump to Scott.
Oh, okay. So yeah, we went to AFO, and that was enlightening. And I started
enlightening.
Yeah, is that not the right word to use?
This could mean so many different things.
Yeah, I know.
It's just you know, we talk about games on this podcast, but we don't play a lot of JRPGs, and I don't really think a lot of us watch a lot of anime. So it's kind of like it's like we're going to visit nerd cousins. You know, it's like not our nerddom, but somebody else's nerddom.
Like we still love them a lot, but it's like not someone we would like necessarily love.
We got it. It's fine. Let's move past this weird point that you're making.
I see what you're trying to do.
Yeah, you
right. So
it's just like not like
nerd cousins. We got it. The nerd cousins is a perfect analogy. We don't need more.
Okay.
Okay. So I've been like checking out this game called Take on Mars, which is on Steam, available as an early access title. And I'm not going to do a review because it's in early access, and I don't think that would be fair to do that since the game is not necessarily complete. But I do want to mention it by saying that it is available, and I find it to be pretty entertaining. And what it is, it's a game. It's a game made by Bohemia Interactive, and they made like the Arma series, and they make commercial products like VBS2 and stuff like that. So this game is a sort of like a Mars rover simulation game, which I'm interested in the content, so I'm already like on board for like this sort of hardcore simulation experience, you know. And pretty much what you do from what I've seen so far is you can build your own Mars rovers, you can launch them onto the surface of Mars and conduct like, you know, experimentation that you would do if you were at NASA or something. So I'm like sampling soil and driving around and taking pictures of craters. And yeah, it's,
can you drive up to that Mars face, the face crater? Can you check that out for me, please?
I haven't gotten there yet. And the funny thing is that you can, I didn't do this, but you can elect to play the game in real time, meaning that, you know, depending on what time it is here, there's like, you know, it kind of like changes where the sun is on Mars. So I loaded it up for the first time and I was like, well, I don't want to play in real time, but let me play in game time. And I was like, cool. So I launched my first mission and like everything was static. And I was like, oh man, this is so early. Like there's not even visuals for this game. I'm like clicking stuff. I have no idea what's going on. I back out and I realize that it's nighttime on Mars.
Oh, wow.
And so I conducted an entire mission like at night. It's just, it was like the tutorial mission, but, and then I realized that it's weird because there's not a lot of like tutorials or instruction or whatever.
You just have to like figure out how to actually operate a Mars rover
on your own. I mean, cause it's early access, so it's just like sort of in progress, but I realized that there was a black light. I mean like a night vision cam on my rover and like, it's cool. But like, I think this whole, the aspect of discovery and even the aspect of discovering how to play the game for some reason appeal to me. And I really like it. So if you're into sort of the sciency simulation experience, I would encourage everybody to keep an eye on Take on Mars and maybe even enter the early access program. But it seems pretty cool from what I've seen so far.
Very cool.
So that was the not review thing I wanted to talk about, but wanted to mention. So Matt, what's going on?
Yeah. Hey guys, I went to AFO as well.
What, you were there?
We're gonna talk about it later.
Later.
So there was that. I got a beanbag chair for my birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, it was my birthday. I leveled up this week.
You did.
Yeah.
I totally leveled up this week.
What did you put your points into?
I think my points. What would I put them into this time?
Wrinkles.
Creativity.
Creativity.
Yeah, I don't know.
You could have said like instant coffee or something. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. So I got some stuff from people, right? And I bought myself some stuff too, because you get to an age of which I am definitely at, where not only is it probably hard to figure out what to buy somebody when you're like, you know, buying somebody else a gift, but like you as yourself, just, you know, treat yourself, get a little something, why not? You've got you've income now. It's like a real, you're like a real human being with income and your own life. You can
treat
go buy
yourself.
Things. So I got myself a Keurig coffee machine, which I am 100% obsessed with.
Oh yeah, those things are crazy.
I drink out of it constantly. I make coffee every morning, I make like decaf at night, some tea on occasion.
You're even snobby about the flavors now.
I can't drink hazelnut. I can't do flavored coffee is the problem. Like if I had ordered, so I ordered this. I was telling them a white people problem earlier. I ordered iced coffee for the Keurig. Apparently, you can get things, put a cup of ice, and it'll like brew it correctly so that it tastes right, even though it melts over the ice. And I ordered like regular coffee flavor called Nantucket because it couldn't get any whiter than that Nantucket blend. And then I got freaking hazelnut, guys. Hazelnut. I can't drink flavored coffee. It's not going to happen. It just is not. It's not in my DNA. I also bought myself a. I've been playing music again, and I bought myself a controller. Is what it's called. It's like an instrument, essentially, for MIDI music.
Oh, that's cool.
That's awesome.
That I love. And then Ash and Christy got me, or his wife Christina got me a waffle maker.
Yeah.
I did level up a little bit by successfully making waffles. I took a picture of it and sent it to Ash and my wife and his wife.
Nice.
It was a good waffle.
Them's delicious.
Big, massive freaking waffle maker, man. The thing makes gigantic waffles.
I'll send you a recipe, this is like the most masculine podcast ever.
Let's do
I'll
it.
I'll send you the recipe that my coworker gave me. It's quite delicious and I think Please you do. Will really enjoy partaking in it.
Please do. I didn't want to have like variables to the first batch, so I just bought like Publix brand waffle mix. You know, I didn't want to be like why does it look like glue? And like it's because I mixed something wrong. And I just figured dumb it down as much as I can for the first batch, and then we'll go, we'll experience more from there. And then my wife got me a friggin' beanbag chair. We used to joke that we were gonna get a beanbag chair, a Bucks one, because I'm a Bucks fan for football. And she went ahead and did it for my birthday, and it's amazing. I sat in it and watched the first half of the Bucks game the other day, and it was awesome.
The beanbag chair was awesome, not the Bucks game.
The Bucks game was pretty terrible. They lost, and whatever. But the chair was amazing, and I felt good sitting in it. You can kind of like, it's weird. It totally encourages the worst sitting behavior ever, but like, you kind of just keep sinking. Like over time, you'll just keep kind of sliding forward and leaning back further into it, you know? But I also learned they need some break in. They're a little like, it's a little too filled feeling when you first get it. So it needs to like kind of like stretch out a little and relax.
Mold to your contours, if you
exactly.
will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I did, which I thought to bring up, because it's something I am very nerdy about, but it's not in the domain of what we usually talk about on this site, is I went to a comedy show on Saturday, a local one, because I have a couple friends that are in stand up here in Orlando. And one of them puts on a pretty cool, like, it's not like open mic. It's kind of like an indie comedy show. Like, it's a bunch of smaller Orlando comedians that he kind of curates the show, and you're only allowed to do it, like, once every couple of weeks. Like, you don't see repeats, you know, throughout the month if you were to go back and see it again. But it was really great, and they were pretty damn funny. They each had, like, a couple of, like, really killer jokes. And then we ended up just hanging out talking about comedy for, like, the rest of the night. I was there till, like, way too late, like 2 a.m. or something.
Oh, that's
that
cool.
I never do.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it was cool. If you're in Orlando, it's got a naughty name. It's called Shit Sandwich. So if you're in Orlando,
delicious.
Check it out. It's at Bull and Bush, I think, on like weekends or something.
Check it out.
But it was cool. It was a very nerdy, fun thing to do, like in a different way. But a good time.
Hey, you guys. You know what else is a really nerdy, fun thing to do?
What's that, Scott?
Going to PAX.
News.
It's hard to carry the torch when Hillary's gone, you know?
I know.
Making the transitions.
Segways, man.
Segways.
Damn segways.
Don't want to miss a thing.
So, guys, what's going on with PAX?
Well, if you haven't been listening for the past several weeks... Shame.
For shame.
But we are actually having a little get together again. So here's how it works. If you are going to PAX in about, 2 weeks at this, less than 2 weeks.
Less than.
And if you are arriving a day before PAX begins, so I guess that's Thursday the 29th, we are having a gathering that consists of many of our friends and people that listen to the show and people that don't listen to the show and people that read our stuff and people that don't read our stuff.
And but people that should listen to the show.
Yeah, but there are people that we like and that like us, hopefully. And it's a fun gathering with food and drinks and booty dancing.
Really?
Lots of booty dancing is going to happen. But in all seriousness, if you are going to be at PAX early on the 29th, then you feel like coming to our meetup is going to happen Thursday the 29th at about 7 p.m. at a secret location. In order to find out that secret location, shoot us an email.
Go to the website.
Or go to the website. We can do that too.
Let's try that again.
It's just nap, NAPPP3.nerdappropriate.com.
Say it one more time.
NAPPP3.nerdappropriate.com.
There you go.
If you just head over there, you can fill out a really small form, and we will include you when we email out all the info.
And it's mobile compatible.
It is. It's pretty awesome.
We're not going to use your info for any nefarious purposes. We're really just trying to get an idea of how many people will show up.
Yeah. Yeah. So keep that in mind if you guys are coming to PAX. Other than that, next week we'll talk specifically about all the panels that we are taking part in and some of the things that we're going to be doing. So we'll kind of ease up on the PAX stuff this week, and next week we'll slam you over the head with way too much information. But if you are going to be there early, definitely get in touch with us, and we'd like to see you. So that would be cool. So Correct. Let's start talking about AFO, which is another convention that was here in Orlando.
Yes.
Stands for Anime Festival Orlando, and I believe this was the 14th Anime Festival Orlando. I'll start off by saying, had you heard of Anime Festival Orlando prior to this?
No. I have not.
Neither have I. And I feel as though my ear is really to the ground when it comes to things like this. But I had not heard of Anime Festival Orlando. It was at, what hotel was it at?
It was at the Renaissance Orlando near SeaWorld.
Which is a really cool hotel. Like the way the con was set up, it was all inside the... It was all inside the hotel, but when you think of hotels, sometimes you don't think of like resort style hotels like that Orlando has a lot of. So the Renaissance had a giant atrium that, you know, was, I don't know, maybe 20.
I was telling Scott, it actually used to be a real, like a huge bird cage.
Oh,
the
really?
Atrium was. Yeah. And not the whole middle ground, but like where that middle wood thing was in the middle.
Middle wood.
I'm going to say middle.
Yeah.
It was this big, like, I'm pretty sure it's the right hotel. It used to be a big, like, bird area. And because all the balconies face in, you could sit on your balcony and, like, watch the birds and stuff outside. It was kind of cool. I went there when I was really young with my dad.
But then they turned it into a bar.
Hotel. They did turn it into a bar.
Of course. Everything's going to be turned into a bar.
Yeah. So I think, in all honesty, I really thought the location was kind of cool. You know, for a convention of that size. And I would say just, like, eyeballing it, maybe about 5,000 people, if that...
Yeah, I don't know. I think bigger than I expected, honestly. Yeah, I did not expect it to be that many people, but but not crowded by any means, not overpacked.
5,000 people and 200 parking spaces.
Yeah, parking was a nightmare.
Yeah, parking was really bad. Parking was no fun, but no one wants to hear about that. We had to park on the grass, and it was no fun. But anyway...
So what did we do? Why did we go?
So we went mainly because... friend of the podcast, Allie Hillis, was going to be there, and she had a number of different panels, and we thought we'd go and say hi and you know, kind of show our support for Allie Hillis, who of course we are big fans of, and she's always been good to us, so we kind of wanted to show our love. And of course Jennifer Hale was there as well, you know, voice of Commander Shepard, and she was there also speaking at a number of panels. And to be honest, I was just really curious about the convention itself, because I was thinking, you know, if this is the 14th one, they have to be doing something right. You know, even though anime, like when I was 16, I was a huge anime fan, but this was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I don't really watch anime too much anymore, but I totally respect it as an art form, and think there are probably, you know, a number of really incredible pieces of anime out there that I, you know, unfortunately don't really know too much about anymore. So I kind of wanted to go and see what the community was like, because like Matt said earlier, it is very different from what we were used to covering and different from what we were used to seeing. So
it was, cool. Yeah, I agree. There was a point, I think, where I was looking at the schedule and I was like, so we're going to Allie Hillis, Jennifer Hale, and then this Mass Effect thing, right? And everybody's like, yeah. And I'm like, good. Cause I don't know what anything else is on this list. Like, I thought I was pretty in touch with anime still, you know, I'm hip. I'm a hip dude with the kids, and I don't know what any of those shows are anymore. Like, the only thing I predicted was Naruto, and there was actually not as much Naruto as I predicted there would be.
Yeah.
So
Naruto headbands are so 5 years ago.
I know. I'm not in touch with the kids or hip at all.
I feel like there was some very interesting subcultures of the anime convention crowd. There were like rave kids there.
We had the rave kids, yeah. Not just rave, but like it's a very specific like techno, like anime techno. Like it's very like glitchy and almost ADD sounding when
it's
you hear it.
It's fast, right?
Super you're fast like, and like
in the corner like super flailing around.
It's probably as close as you'd get to like industrial, like old like 90s industrial without
it
actually being
there. Like there were some people that were like dressed in rave gear and it reminded me of like that 90s like with the tubing in the hair and the
the
threads and yeah.
The pants, all the buckles hanging off.
Yeah.
There's that ton of cosplay, man.
There's a lot of good cosplay too. A lot of people wouldn't did some really incredible stuff. My wife is like terrified of masks though.
Yeah.
And there was one costume that was like super popular this year and it almost looked like an even scarier version of the Scream mask. It's just like a white face with like black eye holes, you know? And she kept like looking around and like she'd see like someone standing in the corner looking at her with like just the white face and the black eye holes. So she kept like hiding from it. But great cosplay.
Do you guys feel like we all just went dressed as, you know, as we normally do, and I feel like in what we were wearing, I felt like we were more out of place than anybody else.
Oh yeah, yeah.
At this con.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I felt like I told you guys in the way, I'm like, we're going to be the oldest people here and I'm going to feel like a fucking dad.
I really thought there'd be more old people, like not old, well, kind of. I actually thought it'd be a scale of like young, not our age, or old.
Like, oh, both ends
yeah,
of the
like
spectrum.
I thought we'd be on two spectrums and we were going to be in the middle of it. But it was super young, yeah. A lot of teenagers, a lot of people in their 20s. But I will say AFO had one interesting panel that we heard our intro friend talk about at one of the panels, which was like the "You're Going to Go See What," I think is what they titled it.
And oh, yeah.
It was just about like what is family friendly and what is age appropriate, like in the different panels there, so that the parents could go first thing in the morning and then know what their kid was going to for the rest of the day. I actually thought that was kind of interesting. That like is a unique way to inform a group that might otherwise not be super aware of what their kid is into or going to see, you know?
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea. I also thought it was funny. I wanted to bring up that there was a moment at the beginning of the Ali Hillis panel, she saw us and she was like, "Oh, hey." And then she was like, "Oh, Nerd Appropriate's here. Who listens to Nerd Appropriate?" And like,
we were too afraid to look around.
We didn't look.
We were sitting in the front of the room and I did not look back. I don't think anybody put their hand up.
It's like we said, though, that was the wrong crowd.
But
and it was great of her to call us out. It was really awesome for her.
We're pretty
like
popular in South Africa, I've learned. So
hey,
if this panel was happening in South Africa, the entire place would have raised their hand.
That being said, we did see some people in N7 gear who like kindred spirits. Like we knew, like it was
a great Ashley. N7. There's the people in front of us in N7 gear, and then we had great cosplay behind us too with Ashley and.
Oh yeah, there was a great Garrus. Yeah,
Garrus. Yeah.
So we do have a couple shout outs because it was super flattering. There was a listener sitting in front of us who turned around and asked if we were Nerd Appropriate. And that was at Allison3388 on Twitter. And she's super cool. She's actually an English teacher who listens to the show and was, you know, telling me that she tells her kids that see teachers can be cool.
There you go.
Yeah, so that was That's really awesome. Flattering. And she was super sweet. So shout out to Allison. And then longtime listener and longtime follower Jen Jarvis was there. We got to meet her for the very first time. That's at Hokie98JJ on Twitter. And she was there, who I guess flew in from D.C. Just to come to the show. So it was great to meet them. And
it really was. You know,
it was. It's always really super flattering and nice to meet people that actually, you know, kind of appreciate what we do. So thank you guys very, very much.
Yeah. And otherwise, I thought the con was everybody was really nice and kind of like a very, very fun atmosphere. And I think there was only maybe one incident that Ash had early in the.
Oh, geez.
the greatest thing I've ever seen happen. Ash, I think, almost punched a kid. It was amazing. It was amazing.
Poor kid.
Okay, so I have a thing, and my thing is I guess because I come from an Italian family, I hate when people point at me. Like, I hate when people point at me, like, aggressively, you know, like, "You go over there." And so we're trying to figure out where to go. And there's like no
all we're
sign.
Trying to do is purchase tickets.
Yeah, we're trying
literally,
to get
we're
in,
trying
right?
To get in.
Yeah. And there's some doofy kid with like giant headphones on and like, you know, I don't even know what he's wearing. It was some doofy kid like guarding some area. And I kind of walked past him because I was trying to find out where to buy a ticket. And he didn't say anything to me. He just pointed at me and then pointed in the other direction.
He was kind of like swiping you out of the way. He's like, this way.
Yeah, he like finger waggled me. And I was like grinning, but my grin was out of like fury.
Yes.
Like, I was so ready to just like grab his headphones and throw him on the ground and give him a wedgie and like run away.
The only credit I give him, and this is a thing we say about Comic-Con and PAX too. Well, not as much PAX. I think PAX is a little more well-organized. But
yeah.
Generally the volunteers who are just like in a certain spot or doing something, like the thing I always say is they have one thing to do, you know, like they only know that they're like, my job is to sit here and not let anyone come in without a blue wristband. And it's like, because if you ask them about anything else, they're like, oh, you're like, where do you get tickets? They're like, oh, God, you go, I think you go back that, and you're like, do you work here? Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And he definitely, his job was sit here, don't make noise, and just make sure no one walks in without a wristband. Or a badge.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll tell you what, though. Like, after that, shout out to the enforcers at PAX, because they are awesome.
They are like, awesome.
I say it every time.
Now that I know what the difference is, you know, now that I've seen the difference.
Yeah,
PAX really is, like, one of the most well-organized conventions that I've gone to, because it's just, like, everybody there knows what is going on in the convention that works there, you know? Like, they literally have meetings where I think they tell all the enforcers, like, here's where this is happening, here's where this is happening, keep a map on you, know to do this, like, you know, keep people happy, don't be a jerk, like, that kind of stuff, and a lot of conventions don't have that, so...
And that being said, everyone else who was volunteering there was very nice, with the exception maybe of this one kid who thought he ran the business, but there
press,
you go.
Pretty fun.
Press probably the only button that I have.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty patient dude, but just don't do that to me.
Do we need to mention anything about the tunnel?
So every convention has a stinky area. There was a really... especially stinky area at this convention because it's Florida, it's summer, and that the light was literally shining through this like thick window, you know, and like there's like all these like cosplayers dancing in this one area, and the sun's kind of shining down on them, and you just walk in this tunnel and you're like, wow, I am like in a human's armpit right now.
It was like baking the smell.
It was incredible. It was like, it was just so intense.
It was pretty amazing. I mean it was cool, it was like it's a thing we're not super into, and we went and to see the things we wanted to see, and then we kind of hung out because we missed one of the panels we wanted to get into because we had to eat. I think we would all murdered each other at some point if we hadn't eaten, so
sure
we ate, and then it was a good time though. We weren't there super long. We were there like 10 to 5 or 6 or something.
And the panels were both great. So we stayed for the Allie Hillis and the Jennifer Hale panels, and they were both incredible.
There's like a positive and a negative to them, and not because of them at all. Like, they were both amazing at pulling it off.
Yeah.
But like, they're not moderated, right? So they would literally the guests would just walk in. Take the microphone and then just sit down and just like talk to the audience, I guess, in whatever manner the guest felt like doing it. So like Allie and Jennifer both said like, oh, you know, let's just do questions. There's nothing I really want to just talk about. So you guys just start asking questions. Let me answer them, which worked out great and ended up being really awesome. But I have to imagine that if it was like maybe a lesser known person or somebody who wasn't like,
maybe like a convention, like voice actors first convention.
Yeah, like what the hell? That I feel like they would just drown. They'd just be like, "So,
yeah,
what are y'all doing, everybody?" You know, like how do you handle that? It's like a weird thing to walk into.
Yeah, I think, you know, there is something to be said for unmoderated panels, but I think the majority of them should be moderated. There needs to be some sort of structure and some kind of flow to it, because you're not only there to experience the person speaking, but you're there to like. You're there to enjoy yourself. If you're there to witness a panel, you want it to be an experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to a moderator or someone to actually structure that panel so it's fun for everyone in the room.
And I mean, props to Jennifer Hale and Allie Hillis, though, because like amazing, like pulled it off very well. We're super like it was enthralling to watch, and it was fun and like engaging, and they were really great at just walking in and running the show kind of with the audience. So
yeah like, I will say cool. I'll say something useful in that
whoa, what are you implying?
I'm saying that I haven't said anything useful about this convention. I've just been just saying weird things, like weird observations. But I will mention that like if anyone has an opportunity to go to one of these like smaller conventions, like in their local area, and there's somebody that you want to see there, this is like a great place for maybe like a more intimate setting, because the room wasn't packed by any means. We didn't wait in a line to get to the panels. We did get there early. So we were, but early, like a half an hour early. So we were able to sit like in the front row, like just feet away from these people that, you know, I think if you were to go see them speak somewhere else, you'd probably be in a larger room with maybe not as close access. Does that make sense? Yeah. No, I explained that correctly?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And plus I've just discovered like, and I know you guys are kind of like this too. Conventions are just fun. Like they're just fun. I mean, granted they can be expensive, but like seeing neat, you know, interesting people, seeing all the costumes, seeing all the energy, it's a great experience. And you know, I'll go to any convention, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. Anything else on this convention?
No, definitely. You know, check it out if you're into anime. Go next year. I'm sure they'll do it again next year. So we'll keep you guys up to date.
So I want to know if you guys are iPhone users.
Yeah.
I'm soon to probably be an iPhone user.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want a gold iPhone 5S?
Meaning, is it made of gold?
It's not literally gold. You asked this before. They're not going to gold plate your iPhone for you, but it looks like it's gold. It's colored in a champagne gold, if you will. Oh, but it's glittery. It's metallic. It is metal.
Why
gold.
Is this happening? That's a horrible thing.
I think this is not a thing for us. You know,
so yeah, interesting. Gizmodo mentions that. Gizmodo put up an article about why this would happen, because everybody's reaction is like, that is the most hideous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Right, but the people reading Gizmodo are not the people that are going to want this phone, you know?
No. I will say this. There are two things. One that I thought of, I've actually seen one before. There was a company that would gold plate your iPhone for you.
Okay.
If you were like a super douchebag. And I saw when I was working in New York, I saw a super douchebag at like Starbucks with his gold-plated iPhone, and I was trying to get a picture of it just to be like, look how douchey this dude is, and I couldn't. But that's pretty rare, right? Now, this is like mass production gold color. The point Gizmodo makes is that this is a play for China. I guess they think that this is a draw for foreign countries where there could be something said to the status of having a gold phone.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like gold. It's just kind of gold. Like color.
It's still a status though, right? Okay. I mean, iPhones are a status already. Whether they're not as much in America anymore, because they've kind of become like degrees, right? Like everybody's freaking got one now. But it's horrible.
Come on.
It's true. I mean, it's like, you know. That's why Scott's getting his doctorate. It's like,
yeah.
He's like, it's the only way I can differentiate myself. but a gold iPhone, I think, is that much more of like a status thing.
You don't even think maybe getting one ironically like would be a reason to get one?
Could you really? How ironic? Because you tie yourself to that thing for 2 years.
No,
right?
Not me.
You
got to
be really
me,
into
but
the
somebody.
Joke.
Somebody,
I'm
not
really
me.
The iPhone jokes, guys. I'm gonna get a gold iPhone.
Be dazzled
for the comedy.
Yeah, for the comedy. Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. See, you know what I'm talking about. This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Man. But anyways, apparently it's going to September.
It's supposed to make an announcement on the 10th, right? September
10th. Is that what it is? The 10th is when they're doing the Apple, the next announcement for the iPhone. Everybody's assuming it's the iPhone 5S. And there's also rumored a cheap model that's going to come out too, like an affordable one, which is also a play for the foreign market. So
let me tell you, here's something like that a nerd might do with a gold iPhone. You could get a Triforce engraved on the back of it, right?
There you go, Scott.
Yeah.
Because it's about that color. It's kind of got that gold Zelda cartridge color.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Do it, Scott.
He's maybe thinking like, about it. I see him. He's scratching. He's like,
oh, man, idea. I could do this.
I could be like the coolest kid in school.
You can get gold member chiseled into the back of it.
He'll walk around PAX with his DS out to get his passes, street passes, and his Triforce phone. Like, what's up, everybody?
Oh my gosh.
I think there is a gold DS. I don't think there's a 3DS.
Oh, man. You would just have groupies, Scott. If you did that, you would just, it would be like the Pied Piper.
Okay.
Let's move on. So Xbox pre-GDC came out and said, hey, guess what, guys? We're going to give you 50 titles for the Xbox One for free. No.
Yeah, right.
That'd be amazing. This is not day one release list, but this is their announced list of games for the Xbox One. There's 50 games. I'm not going to read them all, but... did you guys look through this at all? Did you see anything new, interesting that you're like, oh?
I mean, you know, obviously Titanfall's at the very top of my list.
Mm-hmm. But you're going to have to wait for that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to wait for that. To be honest, like the titles that I'm most excited about are coming out for both the 360 and the Xbox One. So I'm excited for Assassin's Creed. I'm excited for GTA 5, especially with that new multiplayer stuff that they just announced. But, I mean, you know, I'm going to be one of those people that just doesn't get it on 360, no matter how badly they want me to do that. So I'm just going to, you know, go ahead and wait.
Yeah. So yeah. We should say there are 19 Xbox One exclusive games listed here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is a pretty hefty number.
They say platform exclusives or exclusively first on Xbox. But...
Well, I mean, that's just a timed release thing, essentially. Yeah.
Splitting hairs. But for me, I think it's Quantum Break I'm interested in because I'm a Remedy fan. Oh, Max Payne and Alan Wake. I love the shit out of Alan Wake.
You do.
Yeah.
I got to say, I'm still excited for the Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare exclusive.
Yes.
I think that's going to be fun. And then, of course, you know.
I thought Sunset Overdrive looked pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Sunset Overdrive looks incredible.
Not an exclusive, but buried in this list is Star Wars Battlefront from DICE, which that game practically makes itself. It'll be great.
Definitely.
The Witcher 3, did you guys see there was a Witcher 3 trailer on the Xbox right now?
Is it cinematic or is it in-game stuff?
It's a cinematic, but it's a good cinematic.
Cinematics.
I know.
How do you do those anymore?
I don't know.
It's like...
And the Division, too.
Yeah, I'm excited, guys. I think I'm just excited because shit hasn't come out.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. I'm gonna get Kinect Sports Rivals, man, because I want to play some next gen Kinect games. Come on,
come on,
come on! Fantasia, Music Evolved. Fantasia, let me get that.
Harmonix.
Yeah. Stoked.
Looks good. I mean, the list looks pretty awesome. So I think, you know, and I think the encouraging thing is that even the non exclusives like Division and Thief and Witcher. Are awesome titles as well. So it's like, I think we're all going to be very lucky. We're going to have some good gaming in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm your old-timey radio announcer all of a sudden.
I guess my real concern is what's going to be available at launch. But, I mean, you know, considering that you're going to have Rise and, you know, probably Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed 4, like, right off the bat, that'll probably occupy a lot of your time while you're waiting for other things to come out.
I think, right, is another release.
Got some stuff like Project Spark, stuff like that.
I think it'll be cool.
But you can watch TV.
It'll be pretty cool.
You going to watch TV?
I am going to watch TV. Take that.
TV.
TV.
Price is Right. I'm going to watch The Price is Right.
All right. We'll be back with some more reviews and some more discussions.
And shenanigans.
And some more shenanigans. Okay, so this weekend, Kick-Ass 2 came out, and I went and saw it. So I have good news for you guys. It was fucking awesome.
Really?
I really, really liked it. So I guess I should explain. My wife and I, we love the first movie. We actually watched Kick-Ass 1 on Blu-ray on Friday just to kind of like refresh our memories, because I don't think I had seen it since the theater. And you know, I'd read the comics, and I'm a big fan of like that universe that they created. And I wasn't really expecting much from Kick-Ass 2, just because I had heard mixed things. I heard from a lot of different reviewers that, you know, that it wasn't great. I hadn't really read any reviews, because I tried not to do that before I watch stuff myself, because I don't want to, you know, get tainted. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of fun with it. It's all about the exploration of like kind of discovering who you are. It takes place, and I'm not going to say this is spoiler free, but it takes place a couple years after the events of the first Kick-Ass film. So you have Christopher Mintz-Plasse's character, who's kind of going through a lot and trying to discover who he is after the death of his father in the first Kick-Ass film, hopefully, which you've seen.
I think we're free of spoiler territory in that
good,
movie now.
Good. And of course you have the I can't remember the character's name, but you have Kick-Ass himself, who's kind of retired from being a superhero, who's trying to go back to being a normal person, because let's face it, like, he wasn't ever really that great of a superhero anyway. He just kind of inspired a lot of other superheroes. Probably, to be honest, the best part about Kick-Ass 2 was Chloe Grace Moretz, who was just incredible as Hit Girl in the first film. And she kind of is the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, she knows nothing else other than being Hit Girl. And it's about her now, her stepfather, who was her big daddy's old partner, trying to get her into a normal, sort of a normal universe, right? Wants her to go to high school, wants her to experience all the things that a normal girl should experience. So he's trying to make her stop being Hit Girl no matter what. And you get to kind of, you know, see what it would be like for someone who is like this trained assassin to try and acclimate themselves to high school life. And needless to say, she, you know, it's not really a spoiler, she doesn't do a great job of becoming a normal high schooler. It's just not really in her DNA. The film is all about building a super team, which I thought was just awesome. Events happen that kind of drive Kick-Ass to join a superhero team. Jim Carrey is on the team as, God, what the hell is his character's name? I'm going to have to IMDb in a second. But anyway, Jim Carrey's character is incredible. He plays it completely straight. He doesn't have a single funny line in the movie.
Colonel Stars and Stripes.
Thank you. Colonel Stars and Stripes. And he's awesome. He's like an ex-mob enforcer who found God, and now he's a born-again Christian superhero. Wow. Yeah, and he leads the superhero team that's going to try and, you know, and fix the city. And there were elements of it. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that one documentary that's on Netflix called, I think, Superheroes. That's about real life superheroes. Did you guys ever see that? The guys that dress up.
You've told me about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's one of my favorite documentaries that came out last year. But there are a couple characters that I really feel like are plucked directly from that documentary that are now in this film as superheroes on the team. Like, one example, there's a couple parents that are that child got kidnapped and went missing many, many years ago. And so their superhero costumes are like missing posters that they wear on their shirts of their missing child. And then they just wear masks and they run around with like flyers. Like, that's pretty much it. Right. And she has like, she has a brick in her purse. So, I mean, it's ridiculous and it's comedic, but I think the relationship that develops between all the characters on this team, it felt really realistic to me. And I really liked it a lot. And then of course, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, he kind of goes crazy after the death of his dad in the first film, and he builds an army of supervillains. And so you get to see this, you know, this army of superheroes and this army of supervillains kind of go at it. It's incredibly violent. It's incredibly funny. I won't spoil anything, but there is a device that is used in the film that actually exists in the real world, as far as I understand, that it was developed by DARPA, that if you actually touch someone with it, it induces projectile vomiting and diarrhea.
Okay.
This device is used a couple times in the film to great effect. But it's great. And, you know, you get to see Chloe Grace Moretz kind of do her thing as Hit Girl. Kick-Ass is great. And I had a great time. I laughed. The action scenes were great. Some of the choreography was awesome. Director Matthew Vaughn didn't do this one, but I can't recall who did this one, but he did it.
Jeff Wadlow.
Thank you, Jeff Wadlow. He did great.
I'm your IMDb source right now.
Thank you. wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did, but I really recommend it. So check it out.
He's rumored to be attached to an X-Force movie in 2016.
Good for him. He did a really great job. I mean, there's only one scene where there was like some kind of spotty green screen work, and that kind of dragged me out of it for a few minutes. But all the fight scenes were great. I mean, and there's some really like long, like there's a fight with Hit Girl and another character that called Mother Russia, who is like a 7 foot tall Russian like super destroyer female. Yeah. And the two of them fight for like 10 minutes straight, and it's all just brilliantly done. So
that really awesome.
It's a lot of fun, so definitely check it out. Scott.
Yes.
Tell us about Adara with our friend Allie Hillis.
Yeah, so we mentioned it before, but Adara is a game. It was actually one of the launch titles for Windows 8 when it came out on the Surface, I guess, and on the PC as well. But I think if you have a Windows 8 computer, it comes pre-installed with the first episode of Adara for free. And then when we had Allie Hillis on for episode 101, she mentioned that she was the voice actor for the main character in the game, who is Jane Sinclair. So it seems like, I don't know what sort of the general response to the game is, but there sort of has been a community that has built up around this game, and people were kind of clamoring for more and providing their feedback into what they liked and didn't like about the way it's an episodic sort of puzzle game in the old school style of a game like Shivers or Myst or something like that. But it uses new technology to sort of augment that experience. So using tablet, touchscreen, stuff like that. So the company developing the game, I think it was Hit Point. They made episode 5, which is the season finale, sort of like a much larger episode than they had planned. they released it as sort of a collector's edition, which was cool because if you've purchased all of the other episodes prior, like you could actually get this one at a discount, which was nice. And surprising too that, you know, they would allow you to do that, considering I think most games would just be like, oh yeah, now there's a collector's edition, still $20, you know, like, sorry about that. But yeah, this game is really good. So I just wanted to mention it again. And I think they're going to, it seems like depending on what the response for this game is, they will maybe do a season 2, but it's kind of nice to sit down with a sort of puzzle adventure, like more of like a casual experience where this like narrative kind of frames like why all these puzzles exist and what you're kind of doing in the game. And the narrative is pretty interesting too on a casual level. And I think it kind of scratches a lot of different itches at the same time in terms of being casual, but not too like mind numbing. There's something to sort of keep you engaged with it. And Allie does a great job, and she mentioned it on the interview, but you can kind of tell that they sort of the way that she voices the dialogue sort of opens up as she goes through the episodes. Cause I think she was recording continuously as new episodes were released. So, yeah, that's Adara. Episode 5 is out. I think you can pick up the whole thing for like somewhere between $20 and $30. But, you know, it's like, I would say it's maybe like, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours, depending on how fast you play. And, it's a lot of fun. So if you have a Windows 8 machine or a Windows 8 tablet, check out Adara.
Cool.
With Allie Hillis.
I will definitely. I need to get all of them when they're all ready to go and just play through it all.
It's fun. And you, I know that you don't really care for puzzles.
Yeah.
But I think that this game would be interesting to you just because, like I said, you know, I've made fun of like old kind of puzzle games in the past, like adventure games where it's like nonsensical. Like you pick up like a tomato and you're like, what do I do with this? And it's like, oh, don't you know? You're supposed to give it to the security guard. And you're like, that makes no sense at all. This game is not like that. So I think that imposing that kind of structure on a game like this makes it sort of like an overall better game in terms of connecting the narrative with what you're actually doing.
Oh, that's cool. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
It's always good when it actually makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Like I made fun when I reviewed Gone Home, I made fun of Gem in the Eye puzzles because
yes.
Like I hopefully we're past the day and age where that's normal. And you just have to find a gem, put it in the eye, and then a fucking panel opens, and you're like, why did that happen? Like, who built this magnificent device?
Yeah.
Like, why is that a thing?
Harkens back to, like, the LucasArts days, the gem in the eye puzzles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you played Gone Home.
Yeah. So I'll say this ahead of time. This is going to be completely spoiler-free because I want both of you guys to play it. at some point. I'll say the game is short. You can beat it in probably under 3 hours. So I beat it in one single sitting. I think I even did it like before my wife woke up on Saturday morning. I just kind of blew through it.
All right.
So a little bit about the game. It's done by a company based out of Portland called the Fulbright Company. And these are vets from a number of games. But the main lead on it actually was the lead designer on Minerva's Den, which was the DLC for BioShock 2. So he came up with Minerva's Den. Minerva's Den got reviewed very, very highly, and he kind of took his experiences from making Minerva's Den and kind of used some of those elements in Gone Home. I guess the easiest way for me to describe the game, it is an adventure game, but it's an adventure game without any puzzles, which for me was awesome.
Okay.
Okay. I had no idea what the game was when I downloaded it and when I started playing it. And so the game kind of starts off with this ominous splash screen of a house with only a single light on, and it's kind of dark outside. And then when you actually load the game up, you're standing outside on a porch and you just arrive at this house. And there's a note on the door, and I'll just go ahead and read the note because it's kind of creepy. The note says, "Katie, I'm sorry I can't be there to see you, but it's impossible. Please don't go digging around trying to find out where I am. I don't want anyone to know. We'll see each other. We may see each other again someday. Don't be worried. I love you, Sam." Whoa. And that's really the only note that you get. So you show up, and it's raining outside, and there's thunder booming. There's only like dim lights, and you show up at this old house, and there's this note on the door that appears to be from your sister. And from there, you just explore. You try and find out, you know, where this person is, where everybody else is. You kind of go through the house and see what there is to see. I was terrified playing this game because I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know, because I didn't read any reviews. So I'm like, well, is this a zombie game? Is it a ghost game?
Jump scares.
Yeah. Are there jump scares? Are there monsters? So I spent the first hour of the game literally just like staring at the screen. And like one of the main mechanics of the game is just turning lights on in rooms. Like you'll get into a new room that'll be pitch black and you're like, fuck, like what is in here? So you'll kind of stumble around and look for a light switch and turn the light on and, you know, and then be able to kind of see a little bit better and explore a little bit more.
Oh my God.
But the thing that's really remarkable about this game is it's one of the only games I've ever played where you can interact with everything. So let's say you go into a dining room. No, let's say you go into a bedroom. There'll be dressers. You can open every single dresser drawer and pick up a number of things inside the drawers and pick them up and flip them around and read what's on them, right?
What?
So you'll go and, like, let's say you'll find an old note that somebody wrote someone else in high school. You'll be able to read it and see what they wrote to one another in actual handwriting. So everything's all handwritten.
Okay.
You can take trash out of the trash cans and uncrumple it and see what was crumpled up and in the trash can.
Oh,
and you're trying to unravel this mystery of what's going on in this house as you explore it. It was so well done. The music is brilliant. The voice acting is brilliant. Tonally, it's amazing. I can't tell you what it's about. I can't tell you what the theme of the game is. I just have to tell you to play it, and I think you will probably really enjoy the experience. So the game's called Gone Home, and it's by Fulbright. It's on Steam now. I want to say it's $20. It was on sale this weekend for like $17. Definitely worth it. Graphically, it's really, really pretty. Play it with the lights down, a good pair of headphones, and next week we'll maybe do a spoiler review after you guys play it. We can talk about the actual themes and stuff.
Nice.
Alrighty.
That's awesome.
I think you guys will like it. So, Scott, are we going to talk about open world everything?
Yeah, I kind of realized something with the. Have you guys been following the free games with gold that's been going on right now?
Yes.
Yes.
So I kind of noticed that with the exception of Defense Grid, which I think was like a last minute substitution for something else, all of the other games have been open world games, right? So, Dead Rising 2.
Yeah,
Assassin's Creed 2.
I'm really hoping you're just going to stop at some point and go, "What's up with that?"
Yeah, I kind of am. And like, what was the other one? What there was?
It was Assassin's Creed 2, Crackdown.
Oh, and Crackdown, right? Yeah. And so it kind of got me thinking. I wonder, like, maybe this is just a conspiracy theorist in me, but like, I kind of wonder if this is supposed to be maybe getting people primed for the next generation, because
like
I feel like,
ground.
Huh?
Like training ground for
Yeah.
I mean, because it definitely seems like a lot of the selling points of these next generation games that we've heard about so far at E3 is like this whole idea of like you can go anywhere you want, you know, like The Witcher and Destiny and Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed. Like they're all, I feel like the next generation, like that's like the selling point now, which is like you can go anywhere you want, you know.
Yeah. And it's, well, I think I mean, it's kind of amazing we've gotten to that point where open worlds exist in games. I mean, mm-hmm. that's remarkable. But, you know, I think there's always going to be the argument, like, does that make a game better? Does size really matter?
Yeah, and I think that maybe we are supposed to be trying to be confusing the two. You know, I feel like we are led to think that open world means better game, like, as a checklist item, you know?
I think this leads, so this to me ties into something I had happened to me this weekend that I'm not going to tell the full story on, or even most of it, because it was ridiculous. But the basis of the conversation was around games being art. And one of the points that got brought up that I thought was really interesting, and when I tie it to the notion of games, I think it's the exact same concept, is that the internet has kind of ruined everything, right? It's giving you access to everything at any point in time, whenever you want it in your life. So in order for these games or these movies, is what they were talking about, movies have then been dumbed down to the point that if you want to make a $200 million summer flick, it's got to be like a brainless $200. So, like, art movies don't necessarily come out at the budget or time or with the expected sales that most movies come out and are requiring now, right? So a movie might cost $60 million to $100 million, even for like a rom-com. And then there's another $50 million thrown in for marketing and press and all that. And then they've got to now make that back in theaters. So it's kind of like lowest common denominator all the time because they can't sell these high concept pieces. And I'm starting to think about games, and I think we're hitting the same point. We've got games that cost millions upon millions of dollars to make. And there's no publisher out there that's going to take a bet on a Gone Home as an artistic movie. They're going to open world, some kind of multiplayer, a shooter mechanic, easy to find big bosses, and maybe depending on what kind of game, maybe you'll do puzzles or you'll do some like co-op.
Sure.
Like it'll be like one or the other, and then that's how everything will run from there on out, because that's what, you know, EA requires to make a bottom line, mm-hmm. or that's what Activision requires. It's not, EA's not singled out. I'm just saying that, like, I think we're starting to see that, like, these are the tent poles for a game to be a big game. Mm-hmm. To get that kind of budget.
It's mm-hmm. kind of weird. I think it's like a little strange, like how that's shaken out, you know?
No, I agree. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's just because, like Matt was saying, I think it's because statistically they've been selling very well. And I think it's a huge trend. I think if these major studios weren't sinking so much money into open world, I don't think they would be as popular. You know, I mean, it's just all about money in the end. I don't think they necessarily make a better game either. I mean, there are a lot of open worlds that have been, frankly, pretty boring. I mean, like, I don't want to name any names, but there are many open world games, like large RPGs and stuff, that I'm just like, do I really have to fucking walk all the way over there to accomplish this goal? Because it's not fun anymore. You know, maybe it was fun the first time, but I don't want to have to do it over and over again. I don't want to have to ride my horse across fucking Mexico for the 85th time in order to deliver a prostitute.
I thought you were going
to
single any games out.
Well,
that could be any game. You know, Rockstar Scott, doesn't involve horses in Mexico.
Rockstar has no idea we exist.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing either. I think it can be done in a creative way. I think that if it's I don't necessarily think this is how this game's going to be, but if it's a game like Watch Dogs, it could be interesting if it was moderately persistent when you're affecting this open world that you're walking around in, you know? Like, there's ideas that I think can be drawn from that system that could be pretty amazing. I think the Division looks like a pretty good open world game, right? Where you're holding you're holding pieces and you're doing, and it affects things around you. And like, that's what's interesting about open world, not the fact that I can walk around and that is boring to me. And that's what a lot of games I think end up doing. It's like, oh, now travel back across the country. And you're like, why? Because I need you to go over there clearly for breakfast. And you're like, I don't, like, this is stupid. I don't want to keep walking across the place.
And I feel like these games sort of, in that same sense, sort of like have this, they take more time to play. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know, so if every game that comes out for next gen, or at least these humongous ones, are all going to be, you know, like open world, persistent, play forever, play with your friends. Well, it's like, you know, if two of us are playing one game or two are playing the other, like how are we supposed to have this like massive experience? And which one are we going to play for 70 hours, 200 hours? You know, like maybe I'll just buy one game instead of like, I'd rather play. I would like to see a balance. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree.
The only one I can think of right now is like Halo or Gears.
Those even Mass Effect is sort of like has this appearance of being open world, but it's very structured in terms of what you're doing. And it lends itself to a great narrative experience, which you don't always get when the game is like completely open world, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there's a negative that I found lately, recently that, I wasn't even thinking about before this, but I'd been playing Assassin's Creed Revelations. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the titles,
I
believe?
That's one of them, yeah.
And I haven't been completely enthralled by it, so I'm not playing it constantly. And I'll walk away from it, and sometimes I'll walk away and literally play a whole other game and then come back and play it. And the aspect of how they handle the open world has become nothing but a confusion. So I'll start the game back up and have no idea where I'm going or what I'm looking at, and it's like it's just like this big city that I'm not really sure if I'm supposed to cross the river to go to the other side to find the thing that I'm supposed to be like I'm apparently in the middle of doing that no one will update me on what's happening in this, you know. Like it's just like I turn it on and it's like as if I've been gone for a month, but in game I didn't leave at all, you know. So I just show up and they're like, yep, so go get that shoe from that lady, and you're like shoe
like,
from the
what
lady
what am I
right.
supposed to be doing
Oh, for real. I don't know. I think it's an exciting time, like I said, that the technology is there at all and we have the option. But I don't think it should be a crutch that is leaned upon all the time. You know what I mean? I think some games are better off without being, you know, open.
I guess that's the poorly put point I was trying to make, is that I don't think these are game design decisions. I think they're bottom line decisions.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is how we make a AAA game and make our budget back. So this is what you need to include in it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Ash made the point, like you said. It's like, it's not that I don't ever want to play an open world game again. It's just that, you know, it shouldn't be used as a crutch or in place of, you know, structuring a narrative or just having better gameplay, I suppose. I don't know.
Mm.
So we haven't really done a grind my gears in a while, but I just feel like maybe we are being led in a certain direction.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to raise some awareness about it.
It's good. So what happens when you record on a Monday night and you have an Asta and a Quado?
Yeah.
What?
An open world game.
This was planned. Ash. God.
Oh, sorry.
Damn it.
Sorry.
It's pulling back the curtain.
Showed you how the chorizo is being made.
Oh, chorizo. Sounds so chorizo. Good right now.
So delicious.
I had tacos for lunch.
Nice. Good. I'm jealous.
Nice.
We could have asked our burrito question. Maybe next week, huh?
Maybe, perhaps.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, I guess that's it. Ash, why don't you take us home?
All right. This has been episode 117.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
For the entire episode, it's 117.
Yeah, 100, episode 117 of the Rated NA podcast. Of course, you guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us all directly. That is Ash, Scott, Matt, and Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. You can head on over to our Facebook page. There's going to be some new pictures of people with interesting costumes and horse heads and stuff from AFO up in a few days. So head on over to Facebook and check that out. And there's Google Plus and Goodreads and all other sorts of places where you can find us. Keep an eye out for us at PAX. We're going to be running around. So if you're at PAX, please shoot us a tweet. And we'll come say hi.
NAPPP3.nerdappropriate.com. NAPPP3.nerdappropriate.com.
Nicely done.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sweet. We'll see you guys next week.
Thank you, guys. No, thank you, too, guys.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. It's a good show.
Bye, everyone.
It takes like a half an hour to read before I go to bed. It's like the last thing I do before bed
you
every night.
You don't have to read all of everyone's tweets, Ash.
I read all 500 tweets before I go to sleep at night.
We follow 700 people. It's probably not healthy.